This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio, you can stay up to date with everything happening here at the station by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. Stream live anywhere. You can even listen on demand. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My co-host, as he is each and every Tuesday and Friday here on the program, is the host of VSiN's College Football and Basketball Betting Podcast, the VSiN Betting Tailgate Show. We dropped the college football. It's the Betting Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 9 a.m. You can also hear him weeknights, VSiN Primetime. Download the VSiN Watch app today on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
What is up, my man? Yeah, we do Saturdays and Sundays now, starting at 9 a.m. Central. So catch me on the weekends, ladies and gentlemen.
Check your local listings. As always, you can just download the VSiN Watch app. Watch there. But I've seen him on, what did we figure out? Was it Masson? No,
I'm on a couple regional networks.
Yeah, they pick
up Nesson, Masson.
Yeah,
Sportsnet Pittsburgh. So I'm gonna be getting a lot of people who wake up from late night watching baseball. Hopefully, like when the Pirates play the Angels.
Well, what I was thinking
those Saturday mornings, I'm gonna get a lot of eyeballs.
Nesson, right? Though that's the Learners, correct?
Masson is. Yeah, Masson is not the Learners. It is.
So you never have like any of your high school buddies like stumble upon you on Saturday and Sunday and be like, hey, and then just like.
Yeah. No, I have had that. So, no, Masson is the one in the D.C. area. It's just not owned by the Learner family.
Okay.
There was a big dispute that just got resolved the other day in television world that no one cares about. But, yes, the Nationals and Orioles, that is their station. And outside of that, they pretty much carry nothing. So, thankfully, they carry my show on Saturday mornings.
My buddy Justin Moore, who he's the front man for Ingram Hill and like in the early 2000s. I mean, he's had a top 20 hit. Like, I think he's had multiple top 20 hits. But we just always commiserate. And he's way more successful than I am. But we always laugh at how the people that have known you the longest are the people that are the least impressed or happy for you.
That's a fair way to put it.
Yeah, like Justin has played arenas, and it's like, yeah, my high school friends were like, just like, oh, you think you're something now? Like, it's like, okay, yeah, well, what are you gonna do?
I mean, I don't know how you get it, but it's always funny when like friends will come over or people you don't know all that often or all that well, and they'll be like, you do what? You have to talk for 3 straight hours? And my wife's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no. Well, 100%. See if you agree with this. I think the sweet spot to be for a man is you don't need to think that you're as smart as your mom thinks you are, but you do need to think that you're smarter than your wife thinks you are. It's somewhere in the middle. Because your mom probably thinks you're smarter than you are, and your wife thinks you're way dumber than you are.
Yeah, just for me, it would be my dad as opposed to my mom. But I do find it funny. Well, I mean, granted, my schedule does, as you intro'd me, and I appreciate
you work
seven
days a week.
No, not all the time. VSiN primetime days kind of fluctuate, but I do work Saturday and Sundays. Technically, I do work 7 days a week because I do a radio show in Milwaukee Monday through Friday. But regardless, getting the phone calls from family members during your show is always fun. I'm like, what? Just text me and ask me if I'm on air, you know?
Well, and then, I mean, you've had this before, but also, you know, when you're talking in your hometown and you have a take that your friends or your family don't like, and then they act like, oh, you can't answer me now, you're too good. It's like, you literally tried to say something while I was on the air. Like, you know, you could have done this too. Like, you know, this was a choice I made. Y'all chose to make more money, so you went into another career field. But yes, you could have been firing takes left and right.
Yes. So, it is funny though. Every once in a while, like someone will, you know, stumble upon my show in like an airport or something random. I used to get those all the time when I did my show prior to going to VSiN. We were on the regional networks in Chicago and in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
And
so instead of watching like an HD TV, like remod show, we got to saw some Tim.
No one could ever hear me. It was always just like background noise in a bar. Like, hey, I saw your face. I'm like, cool.
Thanks.
Yeah. But a lot of the people would be surprised how quickly I would respond to them, a text message. I'm like, yeah, I'll respond to you on air. Yeah, if the camera's not on me, I'm usually pretty good at responding. Especially nowadays with a computer, I could just type out a text message back.
Yeah, we can get it on everything. It's being a slave to Macintosh. Thank you, Apple, for all that you do. All right, let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. I want to talk to you whether or not it's time for the Grizzlies to push the panic button. They've lost three straight games, all at the buzzer. Three straight losses by, I believe, it's a combined 5 points. So lots of agitation here locally. So I wanted to discuss that with you. Then, Tim, I think yesterday, I had been, Mark used to think that I was just insane saying the ACC's like they need the paddles, like calling the defibrillator, like they're on life support. He's like, it's gonna last till 2036. I think it's time to call in the priest today. That's where we are. So I want to discuss that with you. Then we're going to get into the list. The Jets have cut Davante Adams. The NFL has cut Bill Belichick again. We got some new college football playoff members, committee members. Something out of the West Coast Conference greatly annoyed me. I want to bring that up with you. We'll talk some college hoops as well during hour number two. Tell your story and get out of here. But again, last night, the Grizzlies up 10. I'm doing this from memory. I think it was about 4.5 to go. Now, I told my wife this before we knew how the game was going. This was one of those games where you'll see this from time to time. I feel like it's always a midweek game, like a game that happens early in the week where if you look down, you'll miss a point swing by like 7 to 8 points. Like you could look down at your phone last night. One team would be up 7, and then by the time you looked up, it was even. Like, that's the type of lack of defense both teams were committed to. Last night, both teams were basically acknowledging defense was just something to do until you got the ball back. At times, we had behind-the-back passes. Like, at times, it looked like an all-star game if the all-star game was being played by guys on two ways. That's the type of game that we're talking about. So, Grizzlies blow the lead. They look very offensively their last 4.5 minutes. They were either getting a terrible shot at the buzzer or they were committing a turnover. So it looked ugly. No getting around that. But if you take in the factor, if you factor this into the equation, Jaren Jackson Jr. gets hurt in the first, felt like 2 minutes of the game. Ja's not playing. Santi's not playing. Basically, three of your top four or five guys are not playing, and Atlanta was reasonably healthy. Okay, well, if I take that away, those two teams were fairly even last night, and that's kind of what we saw. But the reality is that fans are getting very agitated because, A, Ja's not playing. That's a huge part of it. And, B, this team, since returning from the All-Star break, cannot stop a nosebleed. They went from being a top five defense to, if you just look at the games played from the All-Star game, they're bottom three. Like they're horrific. But if I also tell you this, this is the Grizzlies' first three-game losing streak of the season. There are only two teams left that have not had a three-game losing streak this year. That's Oklahoma City and Boston. Even Cleveland has had a three-game losing streak. They're the third most injured team this season. And they're still only a game out from second in the West. How would you assess whether or not Grizzlies fans should slam the panic button?
I would say you don't need to slam the panic button. Because as you pointed out, you're without your star in Ja. Triple J gets hurt minutes in. You do give up 132 points to the Hawks in the final play. I'm sure many people are going to be frustrated with. By the way, just kind of perfect execution to somehow get that bucket at the buzzer there, which
totally is agree.
Pretty damn impressive to get the steal and then to go down and a LeVert layup at the buzzer. But I mean, once again, you live it day to day, and I understand fan bases. Like, for example, just quick aside. So I mentioned I do this radio hit in Milwaukee every day, and they always are overreacting to any Packer loss or whatever it may be because, you know, you only have so many of them.
But football brain is what I refer to it.
That's just the way they've been.
Football, yeah.
Yeah, it's been grained, burned into their brain that the sky is falling no matter what. I don't think Memphis fans are there right now, but if I had to guess how fans are feeling regarding this team, it would be more so of the frustration that Ja's not regularly out there and that it feels like other teams in the conference are playing well right now, specifically Lakers and the Nuggets to jump them. So now Memphis, who pretty much had control of that two spot for quite some time, now sits in the four spot and honestly could go to the five pretty quickly too with Houston only a game back. So I think that if I wouldn't say slam the panic button just yet, but certainly you've popped the thing that covers the panic button. If that
yeah, you've moved, you've located where it is on your desk.
Yes.
Not saying push it. I think there's several things at play. Number one, the way that the schedule started out for the first half of the season in particular, it was pretty favorable for the Grizzlies. They had a fairly soft part of the schedule, and the Grizzlies routinely would handle the average to below average teams, and then when they play a good team, more times than not, they got popped. Didn't mean that they didn't beat them. They beat Boston. They swept the Bucks. They handed the Warriors, I think, the worst loss in franchise history. Like they've had some good wins. But almost every time that they went up against an upper echelon team, it was like if they lost, it wasn't even a competitive game. That I think, was not sitting well with fans because I think in the back of your mind, you're always just thinking, like, fraud. Would you not agree? Like, sports fans just, even when you're rooting for your team and you know when your team goes up against a good team, it's kind of a measuring stick game. Yep. And it felt like more times than not, they did not pass that test.
Yeah, I would agree.
So there's that aspect. Then you have a quote-unquote new offense. And the offense has worked for some players. For instance, I do not think it's a coincidence that Jaren Jackson Jr. is having his best offensive year by far. It has really catered to him. Now, I'm not so sure that this is the best offense for Ja Morant. Because you're taking away ball screens for him that allow him to create some space and get going downhill. And Ja's not having a great shooting year, and so because of that, it has led to frustration. Also, Ja this year has been injured. That's a huge... To me, my whole thing is, part of the problem when I see with the Grizzlies is, I think Ja's form is more a result of his health than it is anything else, and I just don't know how healthy he would be come the stretch run. But there's a lot of people that don't like that because the pace has gone up, the turnovers have gone up, and it feels like at times you will be watching, much like what we saw at the end of last night's game, really sloppy basketball, which is just a hard watch. It, you know, when you're watching teams just throw it and kick it around, it's it's not aesthetically pleasing. So I think that has led to frustrations. And then I think a part that's harder to define, so I'll try to like explain it conceptually. There's just this organizational vibe that we're smarter than you, in which we're not going to play our guys as many minutes as everyone else. We're going to play more guys. We're going to run an offense that people that's not part of, you know, that's not a traditional NBA type offense. We're going to basically, it's just kind of an air of we know better. And I think at times that can lead to frustration because you don't know who's going to play night in and night out. And like part of a connection to a team is just like watching your guys night in, night out. And with the exception, honestly, of Jaren, that's not been true of pretty much anyone. Now, I think they've been banged up too, but then there becomes this frustration that comes from the same place, which is, okay, you tell us you're smarter than everyone and this rest is going to work, but yet the Grizzlies lead the league in injuries last year. They're third this year. Show me the proof. Like, show me how this works, because I think if this were a situation where if the Grizzlies were overly cautious on injuries and how you deploy your guys and they got to the playoffs every year healthy, I think most people would be okay with it. The problem is you start to create more frustration and more angst when you do this again and again and you don't wind up getting healthy.
So with the jaw injury, right, it's the shoulder?
So I think it's kind of twofold. Number one, he dislocated his hip early in the season. That was the first injury. So I don't want to act as if Ja's just not gutting it out. He dislocated his hip. Like, it was a it was the type of injury that I remember one of the Twitter doctors explains, like, you don't really see this in basketball. You see it in football, but you don't really see it in basketball. So I'm not making light of that injury. Then he comes back, and he had labrum surgery last season, and this year on the same shoulder that was operated on, he's had a sprained AC joint. So I think it's a little column A, a little column B. I think it's hip and it's shoulder. Because when you watch him, he still has like last week he had a dunk where literally his eyes were even with the rim. He still can be, he can do things that make you marvel at him athletically. But you know, like when you've just been watching a guy night in, night out, you're like, he just doesn't look right. That's how I feel when I watch Ja.
So it doesn't make sense to sit him for, just park him for a couple of weeks, or is what they're trying to do, which is kind of this, you know, never know when he's going to be out there type of mindset. Is that what I guess my question is, for the success and longevity of the Grizzlies this year with 2 months left in the regular season, would it make more sense to just park him for 2-3 weeks and see if he can get fully rejuvenated, or is this just one of those lingering things that even significant rest won't even go away?
So I think that also leads to another frustration. The organization is very, I've always equated, it's like covering an SEC football program. Like, they act like it's state secrets. They're very cagey with injury reports. Like, everything comes from them, or I used to say team spokesperson Adrian Wojnarowski. Like, it's so what happens is you don't get a lot of information, and this is what I've always told anyone, that if you're in that spot, you just have to understand you have a right to operate that way. I'm not telling you how to do your job. I'm letting you know when you operate that way, speculation occurs. When there's an absence of information, people speculate. That's human nature. You can't change it. So just be aware of that. I think the problem with Ja is that no one really knows the answer to that. And I think partly some of it might be, it wouldn't shock me to find out there might be conflicting medical opinions. Some might say, hey, 3 weeks off would give him. And then there might be others that go, like, I don't know, man. Like, I think that's kind of the problem, is that I don't think it's cut and dry. I think if they just came out and said, listen, this stinks, Nobody wants him out there more than we do. Nobody wants to be out there more than he does. But we're going to shut him down for a month because we believe this is the right path. Well, they send kind of mixed messaging because they've not done that. And they've kind of, over the weekend, they've now started to say, like, well, we can't just worry just about the standings. We have to worry about being healthy for the playoffs. So they're kind of trying to thread this needle. That's to, like, give you the paraphrase version. I think that's also what's happening as well.
So where are you? Where are you on the panic meter pressing at this point?
I think it's a matter of, well, what's the expectation? Do I believe, even when they were sitting at second in the West, that they were...
Expectations, I'll say this, have always changed, right?
Sure.
No matter what your team is, once you taste that success, you're like, I want more of it. So, well, I don't know. What were realistic expectations preseason?
So, I felt like, to me, the pass-fail line was, if they avoided the play-in and advanced, I thought that was going to be a good, like, that's how I'd call it a good season. I think if they just avoided the play-in, I would have viewed that as passing, but winning a playoff series would be good. Do I still think that they are capable of that? Absolutely. But if the standard was, when they're sitting at second in the West, if things broke right, like, I don't think anyone was calling them a favorite in town, but I think there were plenty of reasonable people who are like, you know, things break right, this team could make the Western Conference Finals. I was never quite there, but I think the bigger problem that I see with this team is I do not think that this is a physical team. I do not think that this team has a ton of toughness. And for the most part, I think they're kind of front runners. I think when it's going well, they're like, it's when they get going downhill, it's tough to stop. But they're not great at flipping it. You know, like when they get punched in the mouth, they kind of tuck their tail and run a little bit.
So right now, with a little under 2 months left in the regular season, 38-23, a game back of second, but only a game ahead of fifth.
And you have to finish ahead, presuming Houston, because I think there's a clear, I think the floor is five. Because
it seems that way. The Warriors are four games back.
The math gets a little tough when you consider there's 20 to play. So they have to finish a full game ahead of Houston because Houston won the series 3-1.
Gotcha.
I think, though, the other problem is, like, anytime you lose close games, it's obviously going to lead to not only frustrations, but you over-examine everything. Coaching decisions, rotational deployments, everything. Like, that, this is nothing unique to Memphis. But I still feel like they have the same problem, and I think this kind of showed up a little bit the last three games. When it comes down to playoff time and it's half-court offense, I just don't think they have enough shot-making. And so I don't think that has changed at all. And kind of their approach, like, I think they've acknowledged that's a problem, but their approach to fixing it seemed to be a scheme change. And listen, you played much higher level basketball than I did, but in my experience, covering, watching, examining, half-court offense is about shot-making. I don't really think there's a scheme answer, especially when you're just like discussing the playoffs and when everyone knows what you're going to do. There's no secrets. It just becomes about shot-making. I think that's the problem with the half-court offense rather than sitting there and believing like, oh, I don't think there's a scheme answer.
Yeah. It's and I can certainly sense the frustration for how last night, just judging off of social media, which is not probably something you want to judge things off of, but losing that game in the fashion that they did to a team that is not very good in Atlanta, it's just it starts to build up the frustrations, which I totally understand. But I always tend to be, you know, just not to get over my skis frustrated on a couple of results. And that's where I kind of am right now with this Memphis team. It was funny. I was just listening to, I think it was, you know, Russillo and Simmons on their Sunday pod. I think, and this was prior to, you know, Monday's result, obviously. Yeah. But basically, you know, everybody from a national standpoint quickly dismisses Memphis. And this is what they were saying. It's like, well, it's easy to say, well, they've never done it before. Well, who has, right? I think that's the thing you look at. I mean, Boston hadn't done it until they did it last year. The Nuggets had not done it until they did it 2 years ago. The Bucks in 21. I mean, it's an easy, in my opinion, kind of a lazy narrative to be like, yeah, write the Grizzlies off. They haven't done it. Well, has this installment of the Lakers done it, right?
No.
Has this installment of the Rockets done anything? I mean, hell, have the Thunder done anything? They got their butts kicked in the Western Conference Finals last year.
No, I mean, the Thunder, now it does feel like, I think there's another frustration that I've left out, which is it feels like the Thunder took swings this offseason and they
hit. Oh, I agree.
Whereas the difference with Grizzlies fans, it's like when the Grizzlies have a pretty good record of drafting players and getting a lot of value from their drafts. But when they try to make transactions, they haven't exactly worked out. And I honestly think like this isn't revisionist history because the trade deadline was right as I went to air, and I said this in real time. I don't understand making the Marcus Smart trade when they did, because one of my big fears on this team was they didn't have a dog. And Jaren's a great defensive player, and I actually think Jaren has dog-like tendencies, but he's not the same thing. And to me, I understand Marcus Smart had been hurt. You didn't know what you were going to get out of him, but you could not tell me that if you offered Marcus Smart and a first in the summer, you couldn't get a deal done. Like, someone was going to take that. And so I just thought there was at least a value of, let's see how this season goes. We might need him. And that's kind of, to me, it's only been reinforced as I'm watching it now.
I could never, when he was in Boston, I couldn't stand him. And I know he's the type of guy that when he's on your team, you love to have him, but like he's the type of guy that he's that classic guy that when the ball got to him, you're like, oh no, don't. He's like, I got this.
He's the classic guy.
I got this.
He's open for a reason, and he's the only one that doesn't realize it.
Right. I mean, he was playing with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and thought he was the best player on the team. I was like, nah. All right, buddy.
No, but like I do think He could have added some physical toughness to them.
Oh, yeah. No. And he's the type of guy that, once again, it's kind of like Dylan Brooks at times, right? When he was here in town. But when I look at right now in the NBA, my point was, I think Cleveland and Oklahoma City, I know they have the two best records. I think they're the two best teams. Now, Boston, from a power rating standpoint, is going to be looked at better than the Cleveland Cavaliers. But my point is, neither one of those teams have done anything in the postseason. And they are the two best teams in the NBA.
Well, I think there's a larger question of what is regular season success to postseason success? Because, you know, I actually think one of the bigger complaints that I have of the NBA, not even to make it into a what's wrong with the NBA discussion, but I think that over the last 10 years, there's been a declining importance of the regular season to the point in which fans are reasonably confused as to, okay, what does this mean? Now, last year, what we saw is it meant a lot. You know, the teams that had home court advantage, it meant something to. Now, did the number one seed in the West make it? No, but Luka did. And you can argue, like, the best player, don't tell Nico, but you could argue the best player in the West made it. In the East, the number one team made it. The team that was the best team all last year ends up winning it. And so I think that's another part that confuses everybody, where it's like, okay, well, what does regular season success mean? And when we get to the playoffs, is like, does it just not matter?
Yeah, I certainly think that that's a discussion for another day, but you're right. I mean, for many, many years, I mean, I fall into the trap. Like, I work next to a guy who is our NBA insider at VSiN, loves the NBA. I'm like, I don't know how you do it, man. And granted, to each their own, because I sit there and I sweat out a Mountain West game on a Wednesday night. You know, like, I love college basketball.
Did you happen to catch Montana last night?
I did not.
The boys were tied, laying 10.
The Grizz?
No, yes, the Grizz, the other Grizz. Tied with at the under 4, laying 10, covered.
Nice.
That was late night ESPN 2 for you out there.
We're getting into that time of year, baby. Got some interesting sweats. Yeah, I only had one game on the card last night, and old T-Rex Hunter Dickinson was able to get us to the window, thankfully. That team, Kansas, not very good. But I digress.
We'll talk more college hoops in just a bit, but let's take a quick break. When we come back, we got the news about the ACC. I want to discuss it with Tim, get his thoughts, what this could mean about the future of the ACC. We'll do that when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. The Memphis Grizzlies have partnered with Club Tales to give one lucky winner the ultimate game day experience for you and a guest. This includes access to pregame shoot-around, an autograph session, and a Grizz swag bag. All you gotta do is visit grizzlies.com/clubtales for more information on how to win. You must be 21 and older. Again, grizzlies.com/clubtales for more information on how you can win that pregame shoot-around, autograph session, and Grizz swag bag, all from the Grizzlies and Club Tales. All right, Tim, everyone's favorite subject in the offseason, what's going to happen to certain conferences? And basically, from the moment I thought, the moment that I saw Florida State and Clemson basically decide to challenge the ACC's grant of rights, I was like, all right, it's officially on, because you knew that even if they were going to be the ones publicly supporting it, they were not the only ones in the league that were quietly supporting it, as we've seen with North Carolina, who had secret code words about how to talk about it on email exchanges. I believe the people at The Athletic did really good reporting on that as well. But what we know now is that they have agreed to stop suing each other. So Florida State and Clemson drop their lawsuits. The ACC drops its lawsuit. And we have agreed to a revolutionary new revenue distribution model, which essentially we've got time slots. So whoever's getting more eyeballs, basically we have the PIP, the PGA Tour, like the Q rating. If you do that, you'll get more money. And then there's obviously some merit based on the field. But this is what I cared about the most, and I quote from Andrea Adelson of ESPN. As a result of the settlement, the penalty to leave the conference has been significantly reduced. The grant of rights remains in place through 2036, but beginning next year, the exit fee will be $165 million. That fee then declines by $18 million per year, leveling at $75 million in 2030-31. Any team that pays the exit fee can leave with its media rights intact. Currently, any school that wants to leave before June 2036 must pay three times the operating budget, a figure that would be about $120 million, plus control of the team's media rights through the conclusion of the grant of rights. So that basically was just ripped up. The timing of the exit penalty reduction is significant. Television deals for the Big Ten, 29-30. The Big 12, 2030, and the next iteration of the college football playoff, 2031, come up for renewal just as the fees go down to $75 million. So, Tim, when you were reading up on all of the ACC courtroom drama, what struck you?
That we're going to have the ACC fully intact until the next decade, and then it's done. Clemson, Florida State, Miami, North Carolina will all be gone. And I it's going to be pretty interesting to see how it all plays out when you've got the next round of TV deals, TV cash to be ponied up here in 5 years, and to see who the Big Ten wants, right? Is Notre Dame at that point? Because remember, they're still kind of involved here with the ACC, their Olympic sports. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, there was an agreement a couple weeks ago essentially stating that Notre Dame is now going to play more of,
yes, that is correct,
Florida State, Clemson,
yes,
and Miami, right? So the ESPN is like, look, we need more eyeballs on these teams, and Notre Dame needs to play the better teams. So that was kind of an agreement here. I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, it's going to be around $75 million to get out come 2030. That was the sticking point because it was, you can't get out until 2036. Well, now you can. So for the next 4 years, it's going to be this way, and then they're gone, man. They're rolling. Florida State, Clemson, Miami, and probably UNC, right? They're going to be on the move.
UVA is always an interesting one to me because I think where people get caught up, and I'm not saying that, you know, you're stupid for thinking so, but I think what people struggle with is a school's value doesn't necessarily equate to like on-field performance. Like, you know, just use the obvious example. The Dallas Cowboys are the most profitable franchise in American sports. They've not won a championship since what, 95? Are we going on 30 years?
I think so, yeah.
I can't remember. 96? Maybe it was the 96 Super Bowl in the 95 season. So people struggle with that, but I think both leagues would covet UVA. This is the one curveball that I'll throw out there. What if linear TV, because in the end, everybody's making decisions chasing linear television money. What if we see a continuation of the linear TV model dying and those companies that are handing out tons and tons of money? Well, if the SEC goes to ESPN and says, hey, will you give us another $180 million to add North Carolina?
When's the SEC deal up, by the way? Do we know that?
2034. They signed a 10-year deal. So it's 10 years from this season. This was the first year of the new one, and it was a 10-year deal. So I think it's 2034. And the other thing to keep in mind is a lot of the poaching happened, I think, 2 years before the TV deals were put into effect. So Fox or Big Ten adds USC, UCLA 2 years before they start the new deal with Fox.
Texas and Oklahoma similarly.
Correct. Roughly around the same time frame. So the only question that I have is, listen, I think if those leagues wanted to add these schools today, I think they would have already offered. So there's clearly some hesitation. Now, is the hesitation some type of moral obligation in which we don't want to ruin another league? Maybe, but that hasn't seemed to bother them in the past.
I don't think so.
My suspicion is the hesitation has been they've at least back-channeled, if we add these teams, will you give us the money? And basically, if you're ESPN and you're Disney, aren't you sitting there going, why do we need to pay another, you know, $200 million when we just had one of the most successful college football seasons we've ever had? The ABC start with the SEC game at 11 a.m., have the 2:30, and then the primetime game. Like, that was a massive, massive hit for them. And why would you sit there and go, like, why do we need to shake this up and give out another $200 million a year?
Yeah, so once again, I think the point you also kind of brought up, which is a lot's going to unfold over the next handful of years. So is the ACC definitely dead? No, but it certainly feels like this was like, I'm trying to think of an apt comparison. This was some medicine to keep it alive for a couple of years. and just be like, let's play nice for 5 years, and then ultimately we'll have this conference kind of rip limb from limb. And if you're the ACC, you might be saying, who the hell knows what college sports is going to look like in 5 years? So let's keep stability here for a couple of seasons. We'll keep Florida State and Clemson happy, and then maybe we'll, you know, be able to figure something out. I mean, it certainly seems like the overarching result is, come 2030, 2031, the schools that wanted to get out are probably going to get out. And instead of just having an annoyance for however many years, they'll play nice for the next half decade.
Yeah, I think the two looming questions are, it's unclear to me which schools would have value and be attractive.
So who are the schools that the ACC has lost so far in history? Maryland went to the Big Ten.
Correct.
Is that it?
I think they've just added, right?
Yeah, they've added. They've added a bunch. But like...
Oh, no. Wasn't South Carolina in the ACC?
Yeah, that was a long time ago, though. Not recently. I mean, for forever and a day, you know, growing up, it was 9 ACC schools, and South Carolina wasn't part of it.
Yeah, so since the 19th...
I'm talking about in like recent modern-day poaching, they've only lost Maryland.
Correct. And that was the impetus of signing the Grant of Rights is, oh my God, we lost a charter member. We've got to like lock arms, and that was why they signed the Grant of Rights. I did enjoy the revisionist history by some ACC people, like blaming ESPN for the contracts. Like, y'all were the ones that went to them.
Of course.
Nobody held a gun to your head. And John Swofford wanted to get the ACC network. Like, that was like his legacy. How's that working out?
I like it.
It's fine. But I think the out there questions and how it would at least apply to people.
They're on Longhorn Network.
That's true. I mean, that does not get brought up enough as like a media disaster.
What an absolute disaster that was.
I think the question, though, for me is, A, how many of these schools will have value? And then I think there's also this other aspect of it. It's like, do the SEC and the AC in the Big Ten, do they just want to keep getting bigger? Because we already saw this year with the Big Ten, like 16 with the SEC, particularly an 8-game schedule, certainly felt like too many. I mean, Tim, did you see we had to decide the SEC women's champion by a coin flip?
No, I did not see that.
Yeah. Dawn Staley won another SEC championship on a coin flip. I think that was a first, but you have this issue where these...
Hashtag Friday Night Lights style.
Correct. The original. Shout out Buzz Bissinger. You want to win, put Booby in.
So if you're the Big Ten, right, you're sitting at 18 teams, your media rights deal is up in 2030. The obvious needle mover, oh, here comes the Notre Dame fan. Well, it's just facts. The obvious needle mover would be Notre Dame. If you could pull Notre Dame...
Let's be clear. There's only one property out there that is a slam dunk that everyone would break their neck today to add. I don't care if you're the SEC. I don't care if you're the Big Ten. Adding Notre Dame changes everything. Everyone would do it in a heartbeat.
100%. And they're, for now, being like, yeah, we're kind of good. We got the ACC deal. We just pulled in $20 million that we don't have to share with anybody. We're good. We don't really need to. Their previous AD essentially said, the only way we will join a conference is if we are at a significant disadvantage from a monetary standpoint, or there is no access to the playoff. And as of right now, their access to the playoff is just fine, and monetarily they're doing just fine. But they're. I think, I don't want to say at the end, I would say within the next decade, Notre Dame will probably be in the Big Ten, if I had to guess.
My gut says 2031.
Or there's just going to be a point that comes where college football says, screw it, college football is its own thing, and just do whatever you want. Because I did find it hilarious. There were some think tank people out there be like, huh, maybe Notre Dame's got it right. They kind of do their own thing. It's like, yeah, no bleep, dummy. They've been doing that for a while.
No, they get done their own business.
And if you could, and that's where I always got like frustrated, you know, and I still get it on social media. It's like, just join a conference. I'm like, what? You must be an economist. Why would they ever join a conference? Unless they had to.
Well, I mean, and also you see, like, if you make a playoff run, like, look at
the to keep all that money.
Look at the payout.
Right. You ain't sharing it with Vanderbilt, hashtag Diego. But if you're the Big Ten, back to my initial question, you've got 18 teams, to your point. It's enormous. Notre Dame's the obvious one. If you can't get Notre Dame, do you want, like, does Florida State and Miami move the needle? Maybe a little bit. I mean, their ratings are pretty good. Or do you pretend like you're high and mighty and be like, well, we would like some premium academic institutions. And you go get, I mean, North Carolina is an enormous brand and owns the state of North Carolina. But are they owning it from a national standpoint? So I don't know. Like,
Carolina and Virginia are fits in terms of prestigious, like, I don't know how it was in the DC area, but like honestly in the South, there's a group of people that a Virginia degree would matter more than a Harvard degree. Like kind of a Southern thing. I don't know
if I'd go that far in the DC area, but if you got into Virginia, especially if you were, you know, from out of state, you're like, whoa, like, okay, Brainiac, like you got into UVA. Look, UVA is awesome. City's cool. I don't know, man. I mean, basketball team is down right now. Even when they were at the peak of their powers, where they, like, I think at the end of the day, there's a reason that no one really gives a crap about Duke.
No, and I mean, this is the other, like, the other aspect of, to me, is, okay, if indeed they pick off, let's say they lose, I don't know, 4 or 5, is their path to survival admitting defeat, waving the white flag, calling up the Big 12 and saying, hey, we've got to work out some type of partnership. Like, this is those two leagues. We can't catch them, so let's try to merge, and that's our best path for survival. Or do they say, we're going to try to backfill? Because if that is indeed the case, then a school like Memphis has got a shot. You can latch onto that, to the remnants of that league. And it's a better league than you're in. Is it a perfect league? No. But you're telling me you aren't get way more fired up to go and see Wake Forest on the road than you do UTSA? Like, it's a better league. I just wonder, though, if that's when we'll see the leagues finally acknowledge, like, all right, someone's going to recognize, I think at a certain level, I can't remember if it was the Mountain West or the American, one of which they explored a merger, but inevitably what happens is like, well, who's going to be in charge? And it's like, well, I don't know. Like, why don't you figure that out? I am curious to see if their response would be, we're going to try and go at it this ourselves, keep the ACC brand, backfill, or would they try to merge?
I think at that point, if it's Florida State, Clemson, Miami, and North Carolina, for argument's sake, I think the Big 12 says, what do you have to offer?
Well, the one thing you got to remember with the Big 12, one of Petiti's, not beg your pardon, one of Hunter Yurachek's, is it Yurachek? Is it? No, I think I'm mixing up the Arkansas.
Hunter Yurachek is like a internet personality guy. Isn't it Brent? I don't know.
Brent Yormark. You're right.
Yormark. Yeah, yours.
He has one of his, like, strategies has been, let's make the best basketball conference possible. Like, that was kind of his, hey, as long as the NCAA tournament's still going to be a significant moneymaker, that's our path.
So maybe they just go and poach Duke.
That, I mean, to me, like, right?
I mean, I've always, I
maybe Louisville, and you bank on history, like, hey, yeah, they had some tough times. Like, do you think about Syracuse? Do you think about, like, do you think about some of these places that have some basketball history that have fallen on hard times? Like, what happens to Pitt?
Big East, back to the Big East.
Well, I mean, like then that becomes.
Then you got to find a football conference.
And so, like, does I don't know. Like that's where I wonder is is there enough left in the ACC to salvage something? Because if the answer is yes, then I think that's a spot for Memphis. But man, the more you talk it out, the more it feels like those schools are just going to be hunting for homes like the Pac-12.
I mean, let's once again, for argument's sake, North Carolina and Florida State, Miami,
Clemson.
And Clemson all roll. So whether it's SEC,
right.
they're gone.
Right.
So now you're looking at Duke, who's elite as it comes from the basketball standpoint, maybe the biggest brand in the sport.
Okay, I do have a question, though. Are they still the brand post-K?
I think so. Right now, I mean, the SEC's having their moment in college basketball, but
The number one pick is still there.
The number one pick's still there. You know, him or Broome's going to win player of the year. It goes back and forth from the odds standpoint every day. I think the brand of Duke still exists very strong. Now, how much does it mean from a money standpoint? I don't know. Obviously, it doesn't mean a ton because I think if there is poaching, Duke is not high on the list of those schools, of those conferences. I think Stanford and Cal are like, peace, I'm back to the, you know, back to Pac-12. Maybe SMU as well. I mean, the interesting thing is, I think your point is fair, which is, like, I don't think Syracuse, you know, they've got to replace a legend. It's not going well right now from a college basketball standpoint. But I think there's still some value to be had. But if I'm the Big East, I'm like, hey, man, let's figure this bad boy out. Come on home. Syracuse at the Garden against UConn, like, that's what this conference was built upon. So I do wonder if... But I'll say this, Syracuse has kind of gone in on football, and they seem to be thriving right now, so they might not be interested
and it's
in
also,
the Big East.
It's one of these situations where I think a lot of the practical solutions and the ones that make sense, the problem is all of those ideas that you throw out, like they're going to have to go from making $35 million a year to making like 10, and just people just don't do that.
Yeah, talk to Oregon State and Washington State, right?
I mean, that's the fear, but that's the other thing. You never think you're them. Oregon State and Washington State didn't think they were that until it was.
I mean, Wake Forest has got a rude awakening coming, you know? It's like...
Well, I mean, that's another part of this deal is that the schools like Wake, BC, like they're going to be basically like paying Clemson and Florida State to save up money to leave them.
Yeah, I mean, right now you're just kind of banking the money, right? Because you know inevitably what's coming down the road.
I mean, honestly, I think if you're one of those ACC fans from a non-target, if you will, like, I think you just root for the collapse of linear television because everything is still built upon this model of chasing these dollars. Now, what I would also point out is if Amazon... At that point, Amazon's going to be, how many years have we done Thursday Night Football on Amazon? Was this three?
Three.
Yeah, all right, so.
Third year.
They seem to be quite happy with the NFL, okay? Amazon.
Netflix just did two.
Netflix is rumored to even be bidding on either the CBS contract or the Fox contract for the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Amazon at that point will have also had a few years of the NBA on Amazon. So they're going to have some of this data, and if they're going to be happy with it, well, then now they enter the playing field, and okay, well, that stinks. But to me, it seems like if you're the ACC's best chance of surviving is that Fox and ESPN both decide we're just not, like, we're cool with where we are. We do not feel like tossing out another $200 million a year.